Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome to Oracle Divination Network. You've got your Omi Inka 7 here live coming at you this evening. So how is the family and how are the African children? I hope they're fair to Midland. Thank you so much for joining me. You definitely want to lock in this dial. And that phone number is 760-539-3247. You can call in with your statements or questions or answers. One of the topics that has been requested for the family and by the family has been, how does Family Resource Center in the community, what are the necessary things that you need in order to start a parent institute? Now, first of all, let me break that down. The Parent Institute is broken down in a PTI, a Parent Information Center, which throughout the 50 states, there's usually one in every state and sometimes two if it calls for it to be more. And then there is a Parent Resource and Referral Center, which there can be as many as needed. And those are exclusive, and they have a niche. Each one of those have a niche for, it could be for Hispanic families, African-American families, Latino families, Chinese families. They all are explicit. Now, here's the unique thing about this parent. You can exclusively gear your Parent Resource Center to the group or climate and logistics of people that you're serving. Remember, this is an actual self-help program where you're servicing a community. If that community looks like you, and if you're Hispanic, then you would be serving Hispanic families. If you're African-American and that community is full of African-Americans in that geographical area that you are requesting to serve, then you would name your facility for African Americans Parent Information Center. That way the parents can know immediately just who you are serving, and they would know exactly those people that would be getting the service. Now, it's not as easy as you think it is. You have to do marketing surveys to survey your area that you want to serve. You have to send out surveys and get an idea about who has special needs children in the community. Now, this is going to take some legwork, so you're going to have to get those parent volunteers together to go out and pass out those surveys or run those surveys through a bulk mail so you would get an idea, who am I serving? Who lives in my community? If you find out that you have a diversified group of people, then you can lend it to Latinos and African Americans if that is the case, or what have you. Now, the reason why I am urging you to get ready is because the government sends out an RFBP. And what that is a grant. And if you are interested and have done your homework and collected your data, because you're going to have to fill out forms, so you definitely need to know ahead of time, have you done your survey? Have you collected information about who you're serving? Because you can't very well start becoming a parent resource center without knowing the logistics of who are the people and the climate of people that you're serving. So there's a lot of legwork that has to go on, a lot of data collecting and documentation, because when you get ready to fill out your RFVP and indicate that you want to be a parent resource center, they're going to ask you a number of different questions. When you respond to a grant, you're answering, you're RFVPing, you're responding to all of the questions that they have on there. You might want to go look up parent information centers and parent and resource and referral center. There's a government regulation that tells you exactly how all of these centers are supposed to reflect and look the same, primarily the same. They're going to they're going to have to have a director and possibly a part-time, a surrogate advocate who comes in and does the workshop. Now, remember, when you're first starting off, everyone possibly except for the director. But if, according to your budget, if your budget cannot ascertain full-time staff, then everyone's going on part-time. Because remember, these funds are government funded, and you want to keep your budget to the point where your salaries are not overextending your budget. A lot of marketing is going into this, and, of course, a lot of organizational management. So if you don't have the skills for this, you definitely want to hire an organizational manager, someone who is going to oversee the program. You might just want to be the surrogate advocate who is doing the advocacy work in the area of doing workshops in the community, going out to speak to parent groups, informing people downtown at the news department, doing the press release where you introduce yourself to the community, invite the parents out, go to the school, place your business cards on the counter, let them know that you're opening a parent resource center and you are contracted. You must remember, some of these cases that you take in some states, if you go to represent the parent in a mediation or in sometimes, you know, when they go for mediation, they go to arbitration. If you're representing a parent in an arbitration or a due process hearing, which is a final hearing, then you definitely want to post your card somewhere in the school indicating what your background is and what it is that you propose to do for that parent in representing them, in modeling how to be an advocate, in collecting data, researching the laws, making sure that you know the laws and regulation, because herein lies where you're going to have to actually display and interpret the laws to the district, because this setting is where you're an advocate, and you can call yourself an advocate, but not a lawyer, but you can interpret the laws to the district who you are working against. It could be a case where the parent has a child that's been on a Title 20 and been suspended for the year, and she wants you to help her get the child back in school. You're going to have to research all the laws that pertain to that. So you're going to have to hire someone that is very accustomed and well acquainted with the 94-142 IDEA law, the 504 school code law, the 457 for infants and toddlers, all of the laws they're going to have to be familiar with, because they are going to have to stand up to the opposite person, who is the school district that you are bringing these charges against. Sometimes they have a lawyer, and they bring their lawyer in. So if you an advocate, you have to be strong in your regulations and in your laws, because you are going to be challenging the opposite member of the bar, who is an attorney, whereas you are not a member of the bar, but you are just holding yourself out to be an advocate. And an advocate can present documentation, they can bring a brief, they can cross-examine, they can bring in expert witnesses, so they're having a full-fledged trial law. Now, for those of you who are working in the area of law, maybe you're a paralegal, maybe you have been an assistant to an attorney and have some of these research skills for an attorney, because an attorney allows a paralegal to do the research and you've had experience on Westlaw, then you have these skills already and you could possibly head up your facility as the surrogate advocate. If not, you definitely want to circulate and research who are the people out there that have these skills that you can hire and be a part of your parent resource center. You definitely can't afford a lawyer, so don't even think about hiring a lawyer to be on your team, because it's rather expensive. And remember, you're working on a shoestring. What are some of the categories that you are going to be working with in your center? Now that you know that you have to do the marketing research, you have to find people that have prior experiences in this area, you are going to be looking at keeping your top-line budget down and making sure that when you go at this, you are cost-effectively doing things and not wasting money. So you might want to go to the legal department and see if there are students that have not graduated yet, that are still in law school, that will be looking to get some experience in the area of educational law. Then you can provide them with some educational law experience by having them come near and do some of your briefs and preparing your cases for the parent, because the parents have to have someone that's out there researching these cases and getting them ready for their mediation, so that if they can resolve the problem at the mediation level, then they're very successful and it's very cost effective. And if not, they go right into arbitration. Then an outside person comes in from arbitration. They not only collect the data, but they can make the final decision on a case. A mediator never makes the final decision on a case. A mediator only collects the information. That's the first stage, where they are actually collecting data and presenting that data back to you so that you can make a decision as to what are your options. If you cannot come to a conclusion with the mediator, then it is passed on to an outside arbitrator that's usually working as a third party, that comes in as a neutral party and collects that same data, then makes a decision because you were not able to resolve it at the mediation level. If the arbitrator cannot solve it, and if it's not to the acceptance of both parties, then it goes straight into a due process hearing. And that is the area, ladies and gentlemen, that you definitely want to avoid, because it's very, very costly to do the due process hearings, and some districts just won't go to the due process hearing because of all the people they have to pull out of the classroom, and psychiatrists, anybody that's privy to that child's case will be at that due process hearing. And during that time, a large portion of money is lost because all of those teachers are going to have to be paid, and it's not cost effective to have them in that meeting when they should be in the classrooms. And one of the things that you must understand is that you're going to have plenty of volunteers. And if you're doing a parent resource center, you want to start early in meeting the parent, having parent sessions to talk about your resource center and to request that they sign up to become a volunteer, because the volunteers is what this center is based off of. It's not a money-making business, but you are non-for-profit, so you have to establish yourself as a non-for-profit 501(c). So you're going to have to get your entity together and get approved for 501(c) in addition to establishing yourself as a business and having an attorney that can advise you and an accountant, because you're working on a shoestring. Now, what are some of the areas that are included in a parent information? What are the different categories? Well, a couple of assistive technology companies that are out there, they do help with helping those candidates set up their parent information center, as well as offer technical assistance for those children that might have a limb amputation and that need adaptations in the classroom, on computers, as just to function normal. So your assistive technologists have come up with the PHP, and that PHP organization, the family, they came up with a lot of things for the Family Resource Center, and I want to give them credit for these 17 suggestions of things that you need to have when setting up a parent information in a nutshell. And I like to go over them with you so that you have an idea of what it is you're getting yourself into, because it is quite detailed. It's not something that you just walk into. You have to have an understanding of it. We're going to go to commercial, and we'll be right back so that you can find out what it is you need. Doing. Thank you so much for joining me. Those phone lines are open now at 760-539-3247. You can call in with your questions. We're going over the defining of the Family Resource Center, and I'm going to try to put it in a nutshell for you just as it has been given to me. In one of your books, the first book, it's entitled Defining Family Resource Centers, and these are little books that you can order, and I will give you the address where you can order these books, and you can have them at your disposal if you are preparing to answer an RFVP for grant writing, or if you're going on your own independent. Now, most of these centers can be started from the home to keep the cost down, and there's been a number of people that I have met who had their family resource centers in their home, and they did just fine until they were able to transition into a brick-and-mortar building. But just what is a family resource center? Well, according to the definition for PHP, and it indicates Family Resource Centers, RFRCs is what they're abbreviated, ideally are parent-directed, comprehensive, one-stop shopping services, providers that reflect the client and acts as a link between families and professionals. We do not supply and replace or duplicate any other part of the care system. Rather, the RFCs fill the gap that exists too long in the care of all occupational, educational, or geographically status deficits and concerns, or they may be ill or have disabilities. Now, and it goes on, and I quote, families who originally start calling their agencies Family Resource Centers are beginning to call themselves PDFRCs, Parent-Directed Family Resource Centers. And that's it in a nutshell. They're calling themselves PDFRCs, Parent-Directed Family Resource Centers. Now, mind you, now they have the PTIs that are over the whole state. And usually they start off with one, but they can expand to two. Those are different. They are servicing a larger group of people, like the whole state. You may just be servicing a community or a small village. Now, it goes on to say, at this point in time, many people are struggling to define family resource centers as they begin to preserve and perceive them as part of the answer to the perhaps preventions of all kinds of education, health issues, legal issues, social problems related to children and families. Okay? Now, and it goes on to say, and I quote, end of quote, a lot of current hums and talks about Family Resource Center comes from Part H. You'll be able to discover Part H of the Public Law 99457. And this is where we get into the laws. A federal law passed in 1989 to enhance the care of our population ages 0 to 3. This is dealing with birth to 3. This law was the reauthorization of Public Law 94142. You might have remembered that particular law because a lot of advocates used it for the free and appropriate education of all handicapped children in the least restrictive environment. And we all should know those terms. If you are accustomed to working in special ed, you've heard least restrictive environment as part of the law. Family resource centers were mandated. End of quote. Beginning of quote. Recently, Family Preservation Legislature has also enhanced many communities interested in the concept of having Family Resources Center. However, that was not the birth of Family Resource Families. It was simply their coming out party. Because many of us now, veteran parents start the first FRC years ago. End of quote. Beginning of quote. Parent pioneers in this area have recently felt a protective need to clarify and define FRCs and disseminate the information, lest something that already exists started to be redefined by others who may not be aware of the existence of the history. Now, that's just a bit of the history for you for the Family Resource Center. Now, this is all in book number one that you can order. Then there is book number two, adding programs at your RFC, Family Resource Center. What do you do when you want to add programs? You start off with your special group of programs. And you have someone come in to head up those programs, but you might want to add others, such as you might start off with your needs, the purpose, your mission statement. your goals, objectives, the methodology that you're going to use, outcome benefits, who's it going to benefit, evaluation process, how do you evaluate these programs, justified budget. You have to create a budget that's justifiable. You cannot create a budget that is so way over the top that you cannot function without getting donation. Activities outlined as an action plan. You have to have an action plan of your activities that you're going to serve. And then support statements or letters from others in need. So you're going to get these supportive statements from others. Remember, you're helping children and families of children who have special needs, whether they're disabled or they have differentiated learning or they could be blind. But you're not in this alone, and that's why you have them at a phone call away where you can call them to ask them to provide the necessary tools that you need in your lending library. You're going to have a lending library, so when the parents come, they view this as a one-stop facility. They can come and get books on the child's disability, where the parent can read up on what are the new discoveries, how can that child best learn through utilizing that resource center and that library, and it will serve a purpose for the parent as well as for the child. It acts as a one-stop facility because a parent can come to you and ask for an advocate to accompany her on an M-team meeting. Now we're looking at sending in a surrogate advocate if the mothers cannot make it to the M-team meeting. It used to be a time when mothers would not show up, and so the M-team people had to staff off of record, meaning without the child being there. And then sometimes cruel decisions were made and no consideration was given to the family, the distance or location, because they staffed off the record. We're trying to eliminate them staffing off the record so that we can send in a surrogate advocate in, someone to speak in that child's place or someone who will actually be in the midst of that child so that they will help that child to get the services they need. But we certainly cannot let that mother go in there by herself if she doesn't have the necessary skills to ask the right question. Now you must realize a lot of children have been placed in inappropriate labels because they have not been properly tested through Language Learner. And one of the areas that we are keening up on is to get parents familiar with the fact that their child may not have a learning disability at all. It might be a language barrier that he is suffering from, because English, in most cases, is not the first language of some of the African American. Ebonics is. So therefore, they don't come to school with those 5,000 words that we expect them to, and sometimes they don't test well because they have a language problem, and that mistakenly gets mistaken for a learning disability, and they're placed in the inappropriate department of special ed. So that's why we're alerting more people to get involved, so we can properly place these children in the classroom where they're mainstream and they can get help through a language ELL specialist who will see this child on a regular basis and get this child where they should be after testing them and helping them and get them out of special ed where they shouldn't be. So this is a very, very important area. And for those who are thinking about doing it as a contracted consultant, you have to be up on a lot of the regulations and the laws and school codes, because 504 is something now that a lot of parents are beginning to be very, very thorough over, because a lot of their children have other health impaired, and that falls up under the 504 rules. And with the 504, there's no benefits that come with it, only services in the school. So a lot of parents don't know what services they can get for that child. And some of them have gone without even exercising their right to get those services because they're not familiarized with the laws. But you're going to be, because you're going to make sure that you attach yourself to the law library for educational law and for English as the second language. They're all laws that support these particular regulations that you have to be familiar with. So when you go to represent a parent, you definitely have to be familiar with the laws. Now, you can add programs to your resource center. Let me tell you what the areas are, first of all, so that way you'll know what you need to add. It's called, just as I said, defining the Family Resource Center and adding programs to your resource center. You need to know how to do that. Mentoring visiting parent, the mentor visiting parents. Those are the people that go into the home that will mentor the family and assess them to find out what they need for their child. Facilitating support groups and meetings. You'll have to have a committee that will facilitate the support groups for the meeting. Information and referral with direction. Information and referral with direction. Parent-child bonding gift. Yes, you're going to have to go into the home and do visitations in the home and leave a gift for the family or the child. Information package. You also take an information package to the home to give the parent about your services and your agency. And you're going to even invite them to seminars, symposiums, and workshops. And then you can distribute those information packages out. You keep account of all the ones you give out and all the people you service. You must document every phone call, when they call in, and how many people come in to get services, because you're monitoring your needs, basically. You may have calculate enough for the need. Maybe the need is greater than what you anticipated, or maybe it's not there at all. So you have to take a survey of who you're serving, how many people you're serving, and who needs what in the community. That way you can create a report to document and justify just why you're offering this service and indicating that it's needed. And you give the parent the bonding gift after you call them and ask them if you can come into the home to give them a gift. I don't know too many people that turn you away when you say you have a gift for them. They want to see what the gift is, and that's when you go into the home to tell them all about your program. And then there is a unitary resource file. That's something like a library where you file away documentation, you label it, put barcodes on it so that the parents can check it out. But it becomes like a library for them. They have a place to go where they can check out electronic and digital toys for their children, but they have to be first labeled so they don't walk away with your material, and they have an expanded amount of time that they can check them out, and they must turn them back in. Then you have to create a newsletter. You want all the parents to be interested in your program. So you get together your writers, the volunteers that are writers, and you come up with themes. And quarterly you can put this newsletter out, or monthly or annually, whichever one is much easier. But you have to lay it out like a newspaper with the headliners in bold of the topics and the issues that are hot on the scene about special needs or alternative treatment for children, and also for English as a second language. And you sit down with your staff to create this newsletter that goes out to the parents. Now, remember, these are all things that are free of charge. You're not charging a parent any money for this. The government picks this up. The government covers all the costs of this, and you have access, like the assistive technology, to order things from, so that you can have a supply of materials that are free to you as well. But you might have to have a budget for all your supplies, but the actual brochures and information about what's available, you can get that through your technical assistant. Now, and also better ways of breaking diagnostic news. There has to be a way that you determine you're going to use once the child's been tested, and you might have to go to the parent and tell them some bad news. How do you break that news without crushing them? How do you go to them and explain to them that Johnny's going to need some extra tutorial help, or Johnny's going to need to see a psychiatrist? How do you break all this news to the parent? What are the best techniques? So you'll be learning that as well. And then you'll set up a sibling therapeutic fund program. You have programs for the sibling so that they have some really fun programs that you have on your shelf ready to go to distribute to the parent if the parent is there with her children and she's at a workshop. Now, then you have the library. Now, the one that I explained to you, it's a little bit more on the, I guess you would say, on the anatomy of the condition, diagnosis side for that parent to be able to find out about the child's disability, whereas this library is a library of all sorts of books that may pertain to storytelling of a child with a disability. You're going to collect books from various different hospitals that utilize these books where children might have been hospitalized. You might have children that have Down syndrome or children that are repeatedly in and out of the hospital, and they've had bouts with all kinds of treatment. So you might have stories about families going through that. And then you have holding a conference on a shoestring. When you do your workshop and conference, you must remember you don't have a budget for it. So you're working off of a shoestring, and you want to make sure that at all times you are budgeting and looking out for sales so you can discount everything that you can so that you're not working against your budget. Because remember, you're working on a shoestring, and you want to create the best workshop you can. And this workshop must be set up. This workshop must be set up on a basis where you are going to be able to attract speakers, keynote speakers, and you might have a panel. And these are all volunteers. None of these people are being paid. You're not able to pay them just yet. You're asking them to do community service and to bring their services to you and allow you to have them at your workshop so that you can have a great symposium workshop. Now, you might have people that are in college that need to get some experience. Maybe you can look at asking them to come in and speak on behalf of your symposium or workshop. And you want to do those. You want to do a workshop once a year, and you also want to look at the fact that you're going to have some small workshops throughout the year. And you might even take your newsletter. Take your newsletter and create questions and answers there about disability and invite them to answer the questions and give them CEUs for those questions that they have answered correctly and challenge them in your newsletter so that they are actually going back to school without knowing it. But it's very vital that you should understand this is a very, very needed service, and at the same time, it does take professionals to back you up. So you want to get a hold of all the professionals in the area and ask them to sit on your board. When you set your board up, your board must be consisting of at least 50% parents who have children with disability. You must have a board because you're going to take minutes on your board. You're going to report your minutes because when you're with a non-for-profit organization, you must show that you're having meetings and you're meeting with the board, and you must carry on in the function of the Roberts Law, where that board meeting is governed on that particular basis. So this is not some, you know, quick rich get become rich from. It's something you do to give something back to the community. And it takes a committed person who wants to give something back to the community, who wants to show that they care about the families. So when you get these people involved, make sure you look at getting social workers involved who can volunteer to go in with you to be trained as a surrogate advocate so they can do some of the actual advocacy, role modeling, and role modeling as an advocate so that these people learn how to advocate for themselves, because you cannot do all the advocacy, but you can role model and show them the benefit of doing advocacy, because they're going to teach that child how to advocate too. But one of the main things that we must understand, we have to utilize our resources. We're a resource and referral center, so we have to show the community that we have a handle on what's in the community. So you're going to have to go out and visit. You're going to have to go and meet people, go to a networking session so you can find out who is in your community and what is it that they have available to you that might be something you can pick up for free. We want to find all the things that are free first, but we are not going to be someone who is thriving off of all freebies. We're going to go in there with the mindset that if there is something that is of the caliber we're looking for that's free, then you utilize that. But otherwise, you go to your budget and you list those things in your budget that you know you got to have and pay for it so that these parents are serviced properly. Now, you're holding a conference on the shoestring. You get a theme. You not only get a theme, you know you're going to have a conference for at least 2 to 3 days. You also highlight some people. You may want to highlight your surrogate advocates. You may want to offer the training for a surrogate advocate there so you can encourage people to come in and get the training. And we also offered a fee for every surrogate advocate that got trained. We offered them $150. That's a lot of money to offer someone for getting a one-day training, walking away. Now you got advocates that you're building up. Go to your budget and make sure you budget out money to pay these surrogate advocates to get the training at your conference. So when they leave there, they have a license in hand, ready to come back to work to volunteer for you, and you know they're going to give you the volunteer time because you gave them the ability to become an advocate, and you're going to set them up, and you're going to provide them with work. So when they come to you, and if they prevail at advocating for one of the parents, usually in some states, the states will reimburse those advocates who prevail in a due process hearing and overturn the case, and the state pays them for their time and services. Now, and that's not in every state. Now, please don't quote me on that as saying every state. Those are certain states that do that. You'd have to research and find out who they are. Now, here's one other thing. We got a guest back in the room today. Let me see who this is. Hello?
Hello, my dear. This is Mike. How are you?
Yes, I'm just fine, Mike. We're talking about parent information centers, and I'm right in the middle of talking about it, and I'm almost done with the last two. Let me get through these last two, and then I will let you have the floor to give me your opinion. Assessment planning tools for your resource and referral center, what are the tools that you need? Just as I told you, you can go to the Resource and Referral Center. They have tools there. They have materials there. And I got my tools, these particular books from them. You have to go out and order these books. And they're very, very inexpensive. I think, if I'm not mistaken, I paid like $2 per book. And it was well worth it because it gives you step by step and it holds your hand in completing the process of setting up your resource and referral center. Now, number 17, it actually talks about, number 16, a system development guide for special needs family resource center. Now, that guidebook is going to tell you every disability that the Social Security recognizes. You must understand that these disabilities have to be recognized by Social Security for them to categorize them in their directory. And this particular book has to be available to the parents because they want to look up their child's disability. They want to know what it in details, what are the treatments, what are the chances of their child getting better, and can they manage the household with their child's disability. Remember, we're helping the parent to manage these children with disabilities, and we're inviting them to conferences and workshops, and as we invite them, we are training them to become advocates, to role model for their children in the least restrictive environment. And what that means, family, is that the least restrictive environment has to be conducive to learning. It cannot be learning in a closet, nor can it be set up where the child is not comfortable in that environment. And that is a law, and that falls up under the regulation of the 94-142 law and the IDEA. So as we begin to learn, you're going to go back to school yourself because you must learn about all the educational laws and special ed. Now they've added English as a second language with their laws. They even have laws for English as a second language that every child must be tested the first week that they come to school. If they have a language problem, they must be assessed and properly placed. And that's a law. And most of your parents are sharp on it. They know about these laws, and they can regurgitate these laws as if they were a lawyer. And they will call these school districts on these laws and say, I know my rights. I've studied the laws. I've been through workshop after workshop. They have credentials. They have certificates. They're on top of things. So when they come back at the school and say, I know you're supposed to provide an advocate for me. Do you have any business cards of someone that can advocate for me? They know all this stuff because they've been advocating for their child for many, many years. Now, guess what? The government has even said under Section H, because these mothers have become so proficient, they're now skilled enough that they have a skill that they can go to work for the government and take on jobs that are paid to work in a government setting as an advocate. And they've now opened up where they would like to hire those mothers after their child have gone off to college and it's an empty nest and the mother has all these skills. They want to utilize her. She's valuable to the government. So the government invites her back in to take a job working for them in some government setting where they can use their advocacy skills. Now, I'm saying this because some mother right now is out there knowing that she has as much skills as any other certified person. And she's also had waded the water and gotten her child through the public schools and off to college. Bravo for her, because she's definitely a candidate that the government wants to place in a job, because she has gained her skills through on-the-job training. Now, I'm speaking to somebody now because there's mothers right now that are out there who don't know what to do with their time. Their child is in school all day, and they have to be there when he gets off the bus. So they're twiddling their fingers, and they have all of this advocacy skill behind them. I say don't sit on your assets. I say get up. Go to some agency like Assistive Technology. Ask them, where can you apply for a job using your advocacy skills now that your son is off at college? You can mentor other parents and show them the proper way to get through the system, to cut through the bureaucracy. because there's a lot of bureaucracy you have to cut through in order to get your child out of school. Because remember, they're graduating children that come out of special ed with a certificate of completion only, not a core 40, not a diploma, but a certificate saying he successfully completed his time, but that certificate is not recognized anywhere, not in any private industry, not in any McDonald's, not in any military force. So, in essence, you got to pick up the mantle and transition that child off to college because he has funds now. Remember, he is an SSI recipient. He has special funds. They've given him SSI, and under that SSI, he's getting decent money, somewhere in the neighborhood of close to $600. You can take those funds, allow him to help pay for his education, and get the tutelage he needs and go to college. Don't just sit these kids down and have no transitional plan for them when they come out of high school. Have a transitional plan from high school to college, to junior college. Yes, we know he's going to have to take a lot of 100-level courses, but that's okay. He's not out there in the streets ripping and running, looking for a job, knowing nobody's going to hire him, or he's not wasting his time at McDonald's, only getting 20 hours a week, not enough to even substantiate him getting an apartment. Now, I'm telling you what I know, parents, because I place children who actually transition out of high school, and I work with their mothers to get their children in college. Now, somebody's going to tell you at their school, oh, we don't have his transcripts. We don't know how many credits he has, because, you know, the college is going to ask for his transcript, and you have a right to those transcripts, and make sure you get those transcripts before your child transition out of high school to college, and go to the school. Let them know I plan for my journey to go to college. They may shake their head and say, well, you must be out of your mind, but that's their business, is not yours. You have a right to transition that child into somebody's institution, whether it be a one-year certificate program or a two-year technical license. But you definitely want to use those government funds appropriately, because you don't want to throw your child off in a four-year school knowing he doesn't have the foundation for it and be lost. But when you go to the one-year certificate at the junior college or the two-year, you can get all the tutelage and the assistance you need. Your child can get his very own aid to walk with him to college. And any services he or she needs, it has to be granted to your child according to government regulation. You can look these regulations up and know them before you go into the college. But it's very vital that you should understand that. And our number 17, guidelines and the minimum requirement for the Family Resource Center. You're going to have to know what the minimum requirements are, and you're going to have to make sure you outline those minimum requirements, because every Family Resource Center must start out with the minimum requirements, and they all look the same way, unless in some of them have niches and they add on additional niches. But everyone must have the minimum basics and service the community with those minimum basics. So everyone cannot be a resource and referral center. You must meet the requirements of the government criteria. And then you can bid. Then you can answer these RFPs. They give out, I think it's 10 $100,000 grants for these Family Resource Center. Now, they might have changed this since the last time I was involved and on the board for actually helping to write these grants. Now, there are a number of people that will take you on, and they won't pay you up front, but they'll put you on in the grant, so you're paid in the grant for helping assist them. But you want people that have writing skills and that have good, clear, comprehensive skill to help you answer these questions. So when you submit your RFPP, you have a chance of someone at least scoring your grant high. I used to answer grants and read grants, and then after reading grants, making the and score them, and then making the recommendation for the school teachers whether or not they could get science grants. That was the greatest opportunity I had with BP. And year after year, BP would call you back if you had a science background, and you could read and tell them exactly if that science outline grant met the criteria for their $10,000 grant. Sometimes we had to reduce it and give them the $5,000. But there's a whole process for submitting your proposal for an RFVP, and you definitely would like, you're going to have to get some people to assist you with that. You cannot do it by yourself. You need a team of people to help you. Now, I'm going to go back to these phone lines. We do have someone in our room, and I'm going to see exactly, Mike, did you have any questions?
Yeah, to say? You know, including people needs to go to a special sections that, I mean, special places that they donate food freely, and register with them. Just make sure you don't put your telephone numbers or your driver license. Maybe take a badge ID from your school. That's fine. As long as you have something they want to ride, that's fine. Never give them your driver license information, because in California, you know that right now, whatever is the last four number of your Social Security is, they opposite it. For example, it's 2255. And then if a person knows that 5522 is your real phone numbers, they can get a lot of information for you. So you have to protect yourself at the same time, because these places, you don't know how they protect your information. Or always you can ask them, okay, I give you all this information, how are you going to protect my information? Especially when you get food, etc. Because these people, yeah, you get into the line, they ask you, say, yes, I am. So, you know, kind of talk always low. And so make sure, that, you know, you sign it. You don't have to sign exactly what you sign. Regularly just put your abbreviations, for example. Real is none of their business. Those are free. Anybody can go to anywhere in the United States to get the food pantries, you know. And because those foods are throwing away anyway, anybody, it's free. Anybody can get it. Go ahead.
But because people are going to come up short nowadays because they have cut off the EBT. They've cut that card off, so they're going to need pantries to go to. And I would imagine that families that are on SSI, and maybe that's all they have coming in for their child, and they want to continue to feed their children, and if they don't have the EBT cards, they're going to have to set themselves up with the pantry and go in there, and they will have to give them their right information, because most of these places are legitimate. They really do want to help you, and they allow you to come in so many times a month, and that could help tide them over and give them that supplement they need for their children, because a lot of children come to school hungry, and a lot of them are starving. And what I found out most when I was teaching school, that I had to bring groceries to school. I had some of the gentlemen in the community that would stock my shelf with food, because I did not believe in teaching a child that was hungry. I would go to the store before I came to class and bring the food to stock the shelves. And I taught them how to properly sit down to a dining table to eat, so that they're not rushed and they're not eating, standing up, watching TV. They're at the table and they're communicating, and it's called fine dining. And that's something you're supposed to teach preschoolers. And we made sure every day we did that. And I taught them to serve with love, that they would go get their pupils and bring them to the table, and they would seat them, pull the chair out and seat them, so that they can become servants. So if they ever had to take a job working somewhere as a servant, they knew how to serve people. Because eating is a social thing, it's a ritual. and families come together to talk about things and issues. And that's where you can, you know, with the things on your shoulder, on your heart, that's when you can communicate. We know during class time, we always say, shut up, be quiet, sit down. At the table, you can talk, and it's a appropriate way for doing that. And I know, and most black families, they're accustomed to everyone talking at the same time. We said, no, there's an order about this. You must wait until that person finishes, then you can say something. So a lot of the parents, they got the names of all of these particular pantries, and they would go there, and they would stock up. Now, it didn't make, I always felt if you didn't need the food, then don't go there. Let somebody else go. And some people become so greedy, they want to just go there and honk up all the food. You cannot stockpile food. You know, that's the worst thing to do. But you certainly can take advantage of what the government has to offer you. I mean, even me, even when I was working, if I thought it was necessary to go there and pack and get some things I can use for my classroom or my lunch, that I would always, you know, go there. And they said, well, I'm glad you're taking advantage of this. You're a senior. You can. And seniors don't know they can take advantage of it, but they can. So that's a good point, Mike. Now, Mike, what we've been talking about is how to set up a center. And when you know all of our community centers are gone, we don't have them anymore. So parents are scratching their heads saying, how do we get those parent centers back? Every school that's public has a department of special ed, and every parent needs to have a resource center, somewhere they can go after class and go and find books and materials for their special needs children. So we're creating special library just for these families to have special needs children. And we're saying that they can set them up themselves. Most parents didn't know this, but now we can help them set them up themselves. So we're talking about...
You know, in Australia, they have called government centers, and people can go from morning 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. at night. So, for example, in our case, the kid needs to go someplace else. So in order not to get in trouble, so they have already centers made in Australia, like 20 there, New Zealand also made five or more same, you know, so people can go there, and they give them free, secure, you know, Wi-Fi, so people don't get, you know, have issues with their computers. And plus, they, you know, so people get together in five and do some project, whatever project is. And in government in Australia, usually, what it does is say, okay, we have so much, say, traffic. I mean, so much our buses, our metros are full. Okay, they send information there. So five students decide, okay, we want to work in this, eradicate this, they call it open source. Open source it to the people, so the people can able to solve the problem of their own country. And so, you know, they go and they get all those information, whatever they need, they will be provided for them. And then those five people, or maybe six, seven people together, so they have about 1 year or whatever, until they find solution for their metros. I mean, maybe we need to put more buses at this time. Okay, if we do this, what will happen? Yeah, and so in other countries, but only in our countries, unfortunately, they have all these problems. Instead of take it to the community, I mean, tell this school kid, say, we have built you centers. Instead of making wars with Venezuela, instead of making wars in Middle East, and etc., our, where the hell our money goes? That's right and wrong. Instead of put it for the people of the country, so we can they can send. Okay, what are the problem in this XYZ hospital? You go there, it's 10 hours wait. What the hell is 10 hours wait? Is that's absolutely not acceptable. Right. Okay, these students will need data. Special data, be that the name, address, etc. Just what time they came, what time they, put them into take their blood pressure, heartbeat, etc. And why they have to wait 10 hours. So these five students or six, seven will give recommendation to so hospital that, you need to implement this, implement that, implement this. So instead of people going, to go kill each other, and, there is no mother loves anymore, unfortunately, or they don't, because mother is busy with work, mother is busy with other issues. Go ahead, please.
Mike, you mentioned a whole lot of good things there, and I do know that it takes organization and structure. It takes shows like I'm doing to talk to people like I am real and available to help them to get started. You know, through email and through online media, there is so much you can do through Skype now, and what you were describing was engineering. And people stepping in, looking at their own problems, trying to find solution to their own problems. And that's all an engineer does anyway. So we all have the capability of having high-tech jobs. We can all delegate these responsibilities to the young people as well as the old so that we become a community of problem solvers and we don't sit there and wait for things to get better. We take what we have to try to solve problems. There were a group of people that were setting up business without business plan, without buildings. They, all these apprehensions, well, I need to have a building before I can get started. Oh, I need to get a business plan. Oh, I need about $1 million. No, they were finding that these exclusive graduates who were very intellectual, they came together without any business plan or the money, and they pool resources, and they pool resources, and they begin to solve problems of the world. We are waiting far too long for our geniuses to come. We are the geniuses that they want to see. I mean, if we could go to school and become summa cum laude and graduate distinguished, then we have the mindset to go in and troubleshoot a problem to correct it. And that's why I stepped out on this. We have a problem with too many kids being pulled out of mainstream class, being miseducated, sitting in special ed doing nothing but tiddlywinks and puzzles, and then coming out after 16 years with a credential that only says that they completed the program. It does not say that they mastered anything, and it didn't say that they were able to read or any of that, and the mothers are allowing it. I'm saying to the mothers, step in there, create your resource and referral center, and if they cannot do any better than that for your Johnny or your Susie, and they're coming out with a piece of paper that's not acknowledgeable by any military arena, then you need to step up, create that resource and referral center, and supplement your child's learning so that he gets exposed to Core 40. Those children never get exposed to Core 40. It is a disgrace where they pull them out of the mainstream and say, you're not going to learn Core 40. And Core 40 is what is a preparation to get you in college. So that means they've already denied that child to go to college because they're not teaching him from the Core 40. I marketed the Core 40. I was a little apprehensive at first because it meant changing things, inconsistency. But I found out it was the best thing for English as a second language because it actually upped the ante and put the stakes extremely high so that the child could not only learn English, but he could be grafted back into the mainstream so he can finish his other electives and graduate. All those English as a second language children were not on top of things. They had not finished all of the core requirements. So by the time June rolled around, they only had English under their belt and had no science and math. So they could not graduate them, and it delayed them. So we've got to get this thing clear. People want to matriculate through the disciplines. They want to finish them, and they want to graduate. Nobody wants to go to special ed off in a corner where they're not learning the same core 40 as everybody else, and they know they're able to be challenged because they've never been taught to read, so now they're doomed to special ed, and when they come out, they're penalized where they cannot go and get a basic job, and we are paralyzing our children through miseducation of special ed. Special ed
yes.
needs to have an overhaul. It needs to be broken down, and every one of those children needs to go back to mainstream, and no teacher that's worked for South should sit there and say, I can't teach this child. You can't teach the child, then hit the door. You're not a teacher, because teachers reteach things to those children who cannot grasp it up front, and they make sure that children learn to use phonemic awareness, encoding, decoding, and they learn properly how to do the slide rule so they know how to break every word down. They have the key to unlock a word. They're leaving these children baffled where they're telling them to memorize a word or look and say. We don't do that anymore. We know phonemics, so we should teach them phonemic awareness. But yet we got kids in special ed, and their only problem is they can't read. So is that an indictment to go to special ed? No. That means the teacher has to go back to school and get some skills to work one-on-one with that child till that child masters reading. You are not a teacher until you taught a child how to master reading. And this is why I'm saying to these parents,
amen,
get in these referral centers and teach your own children how to read. Go home and get them a tutor and make sure they master reading. Then show the teachers off and say, well, I was able to do it, and I'm not even a certified teacher. What in the world are you doing here in the school getting paid $50,000 and can't teach my Johnny to read? Do you understand what I'm
right.
saying, Mike?
Yes. It seems you are in California. I'm in Singapore right now anyway, because the reason I left America to Singapore because of prejudices, because of racism, and because I work my butt off. And then my manager came, said, you have an accent, we cannot promote you. I said, okay, all right, okay, no problem. I mean, that was my thing, and I put application, I granted job immediately, and I just came to Singapore too. So, but you know, you are in California. There is an institution called ROP, Regional Occupational Program. If you put Regional Occupational Program, I'm sure you find it within your city or two city next ROP, and ROP is responsible for career exploration and planning, work readiness and employability preparation, assistance with occupational training and college, paid work experience and incentive, about $2,000 for each participant, personalized assistance with job search, employment application, interviewing strategy, and also the age has to be between 17 to 24. But since we have many, many disabled people in United States of America, so therefore they are eligible to go similar program. I mean, I'm sure other state has, or even you can go to your unemployment center. I mean, the disability centers, and you can fill up some paperwork with them, and they have to work with you to get what you want. what kind of job you like to be, since we know all the jobs are going to go with robots, bye-bye, our jobs. So we have to go to something high-tech, something that we can, have a more job security. Go ahead, please.
So, is that located, Mike? Is that in Singapore?
Yeah, I'm in Singapore right now. Yes. Singapore is
the programs were better in Singapore?
Oh, no. Yes, of course. When I find a job, I am working by I work, my wife also works to Singaporean. But the cush, thing is, I don't have to go through the bullshit of racism here. I don't have to go, to be, say you have an accent. So everybody has an accent. Who give a damn about it, example. But here we are also multicultural. We have Malaysian, we have Chinese, we have many American people work in Singapore. Go ahead, please.
What I wanted to ask, so you left America to go to Singapore to find work, and you found that they had a wealth of training and preparation so you can get better jobs. Is that what you're saying?
No. Whatever I was doing, I went there, and I'm doing the same thing. And, yes, they train you whenever I want to go to different conferences or different upgrade my skills, they pay for it, Singapore. My boss wants me to
say, because they were fighting you because of your accent. I teach English as a second language. That's what I went back to school for. And even in Germany, when I was there, they wanted me to do some work with the businessman to help get rid of their accent. There are teachers that can help you get rid of your accent. You do it for you so you can better yourself. And that way you never will get penalized for having a heavy accent. Because once you
I know. But I don't care right now. I am very well. I'm very comfortable, very nice in Singapore. And, my wife also works. And so we have no problem here right now. I mean, have from India, we have people from blacks, from Africa, we have American people here. I have American friends here right now in Singapore, and we go have a beer together and et cetera. So, when I asked them, I said, what bring you here? Everybody had different story that why they came to work in Singapore. Because of the race. Racism in United States is not abolished. Until it's not abolished, I will not put my leg in United States. That's my program.
About the language, what is their language there in Singapore? What do they speak?
Malay. Yeah, because it was a colony by Malaysia. Also... we have a lot of Chinese landlords here in Singapore. And actually we have about 10% vacancy, 10% of vacancy on renting apartments here in Singapore. But, if you're from India or Africa, they will not give it to you, or they will make you to pay 6 to 12 months ahead of time.
Okay. Well, that sounds like a great place for people who are making a transition. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we are talking about implementing resource centers in your community. What must you do? How can you identify with the movement if you don't have a special needs child? You still can get involved and be a volunteer. I've been a lifetime volunteer as an advocate, and I've been trained as a surrogate advocate by various different places like The Source, and Design for Change out of Chicago, Illinois, as well as being in the School of Special Education for my second endorsement in graduate work. I've completed lots of courses in that area and in the law. So how can you get involved if you don't have a child that's in special ed? You can volunteer. You can help to set up resource centers. If your community does not have a resource center and there is an actual advocate already that's trained, get behind her. Help her to set that resource center up. Allow yourself to get approved for the 501(c), because you're going to have to be a corporation with the board. So start looking for your board members. And as I told you, those board members have to at least be 50% families with disability. Now, I did indicate to you that there is a creative newsletter, as I said. Now, we have mentor visiting parent programs and facilitating support group meetings. Now, what is a support group? A support group is a group of family members who have special needs children who need to go and rub shoulders with other people with like experiences. And just like anything that you have people that need to rub shoulders and be part of a network, they can have their facility where they actually create a support group. There are support groups in the CHAD chapter, Children with Attention Deficit Disorder. Just like you can create your Hispanic Resource Center, your African-American Resource Center, your Jewish Resource Center, and you can bring those people together like a small church segment, and you can meet with them, giving them up-to-date information, allow them to correspond, to talk about their issues and their concerns, and support them. If they're looking for more information, then that director can provide them with more information about their child's disability. They can also provide them with a connection to an attorney that does SI cases that will do the cases for the parent who is trying to get their child assessed and approved for permanent disability. Now, parents can do an even better job and start researching what are the disabilities out there that are approved by Social Security office. What must your child do when he wants to be assessed? How do you get your child assessed? Do you go to the school and let the psychiatrist assess him? Or do you ask for a list of psychiatrists that you can get your own child assessed through the psychiatrist, or you can go and pick your own psychiatrist? But we must understand we need these parent resource centers, and I just completed, through a government grant, training and development for teachers who wanted to learn about the special education laws and parents. And we completed a 5-day training that is available on the market for parents and potential advocates to purchase. It's a 5-day training that I went through with a number of other professional surrogate advocates around the country who came in, and they also became students, and we actually went through the training that went all the way from the legalities of the laws of special ed, understanding the regulation, looking at the 504, looking at the 94-142, the IDEA laws, and then applying them. We put it together so that you can take this material and replicate it and utilize it in your family resource center. And we must get the word out there that it is necessary for every community, black or white, Jewish or Gentile, to have a resource center and to recreate communities back in their communities so that we have somewhere where these parents can have an outlet, so they have a support group and they can go there and get the help they need, whether it be from the lending library, whether it be from a workshop, symposium, or networking just with people who have like conditions, so that we are not alone in our community and we're having to be faced with going to the public school, keeping our child in special ed and not getting the answers you want. Make sure you network with a resource center somewhere in the community. Now, if you don't have one built up in your community, find another location that's closest to you of those support groups and attend them. And go there with the understanding that you want to learn to mentor and advocate on behalf of your son or your daughter. The advocation starts with the mother, because you are not going to continue to do the advocating for him. One day he's going to learn how to self-advocate for him or herself, but you must start the process. And that's what I'm doing, getting the momentum going. So as I roll the snowball, the momentum will keep going, and you will see that you need to take over and be your own child's best advocate. Now, facilitating support group is a must. You can start doing that right now, bringing people together over coffee and tea, talking about the issues of their child in special ed. Why isn't he advancing? Why isn't she being promoted? And will she graduate with a certificate that has no value to it? Can you do something beforehand? Can you get that child mainstream back in the classroom so they can graduate with a Core 40? Is it too late? All these questions have to be asked. Information referral and direction. You have to implement that. As I told you, the parent-child bonding gift, you want to use that to lure your people there, whether it be a gift card. You take it to the family and say, here's a gift for your family. We'd like for you to come up to the resource center, bring your child. I understand you have a disabled child in the home. We'd like for you to network with us and bring your child. We have activities for your child, and you come to the meeting. So you use those gifts to help bring people to the meeting. As I talked about creating that library and holding your conference on a string, assessing and planning tools. Where do you get these assessings and planning tools? You go online and you Google for them. You look for all the freebies that are out there. And those that you cannot buy, you go and put your list together of things that you need to buy for your center. You bring in as many volunteers and you organize them and you schedule them to come in to assist you and your resource center. But the resource center can be a great thing. I once operated a resource center out of my home, and I got chosen to come into a psychiatrist's office to do the CHAD chapter's resource and referral. And we set up three different cities with a resource and referral center, and we started from our home. These women stayed together for over 3 years working for the benefit of the whole, supporting families with special needs. I didn't have a special needs child, but because I was in a state that I was brand new and I had some free time where I could actually help establish these ladies. And to this day, I'm in the history for setting up one of the first CHAD chapter groups in the Schaumburg-Hoffman Estates area. And that is Schaumburg, Illinois, one of the richest areas in the nation, where there are so many children that are male child that are put on special ed tickets, and they are wearing these labels now. And the biggest thing is for us to revamp special ed, to look at bringing the child back into the mainstream and helping that teacher to learn how to teach the child to read, and helping that teacher to learn how to take that curriculum out of the box, manipulate it, start working with it, and stop pushing all that reading material off to the side. You'll get to it next year. We want you to get to that reading material immediately, because Johnny cannot graduate and not being able to read, and you have all the mechanism right there in the box, which you refuse to use. Maybe you haven't learned to manipulate and use the material. Maybe you need to go back for some refreshers courses or some continuing education, but you sure can't sit in that classroom and keep making referrals to special ed and passing on your responsibility for somebody else to teach to read. Once that child gets in special ed, it's a smaller group, I understand, but 9 times out of 10, he doesn't leave there with the intentions to read, because they have other children that they're working with. And teachers have got to need more help. I need to go and get training. I need to be able to keep that child mainstream here so he can get the necessary hours that he needs to graduate and endorsement in the right area so he has the correct coursework that he needs to transition from high school to college. Parents, don't ever think that because your child has special needs that they cannot learn. Don't ever think that they don't belong in a vo-tech school or in a certificated program at a junior college because you don't want your child sitting at home. They can stay in special ed till they're 22, but you don't want them graduating without a skill and without a trade because they become a problem and they become a nuisance in your household. You want them to be transitioning into somebody's one-year certificate program or two-year associate program or vo-tech training. So that can happen. And you can go to your counselors and say, hey, my Johnny's graduating in 2 years. Let's start the process for making preparation for him to transition into a junior college. They're going to look at you cross-eyed. They're going to look at you upside down and say, it's not possible. Johnny's not reading. Then you get a tutor for Johnny so Johnny can start learning to read and focus primarily on nothing but reading until Johnny learns to comprehend. Reading is not just calling words. It's comprehending, too. So, mothers, you got to get behind those children that are not reading. Get those children in Saturday programs where they're learning to read because most of their learning disability is the inability to have been taught the phonetics of reading. It has nothing to do with their brain. They're still capable of learning. They just need to go somewhere where they can break down and unlock the codes to decoding and encoding reading. And the slide rule, clapping out the syllables, all of this stuff can be made fun. And if you're out there and you would like more information on this, you need to understand one thing. You've got to look up the resources. Don't just use social media to get online to do Facebook. Get online and start researching things. You can call in now at 760-539-3247. And if you are in need of resources, they are available for you in abundance online. But don't have your child in special ed and you're not connected to the source, the heartbeat. What are the services that are out there? How can I turn my child's condition around? What are the necessary tools that I need to unlock the soul of reading to my child so he can hear for him the first time himself reading? But it's very valuable that you should know, as an English and second language or English as a new language specialist, I can tell you this much. Most of the children who have been diagnosed for special ed have been misdiagnosed for reading disabilities, but because the teacher saw a deficit, they put them in special ed, but a language special ed is different from going to special ed. You can treat the child right in the classroom, or you can put them in an ELL program where they are not in special ed, but they're actually working all of their discipline. Now, I want to say this much. We've had a gentleman in the room with us who have been giving us some insight about other countries and how they do things when they help people who need to be able to access a job who might have some issues with learning or speaking, accents. But that should be no reason to discriminate against people for the jobs that are out there. If you have a perfectly sound mind, and having an accent does not mean that you're an idiot. It does not mean that you're not capable. It means that there needs to be training going on with more learning of languages. And as you learn more languages, your skills will get better, your accent will go away, and you will find yourself being able to actually interpret more than one language. And it's very vital that mothers get behind these children and realize that if they open up the resource and referral center, it will provide a place for not only their children but for many children to come. And they will feel good about their child's learning, and they will feel like they're supporting a community to change things for our children that are diagnosed with differentiated learning, special ed. So I said a mouthful today, and I want to thank Mike for coming along and being along with us today and giving us
the input.
Okay.
Sure, thank you. But let me give you a number, please. This or go to their website, because this is the closest to you, I believe. It's three W's you put, dot, C like Charlie, R like Romeo, Y like
on.
Yellow, R.
My pen, hold on for a minute, Mike. Let me get my pen stop writing.
Okay. Sure.
This is for the program that you're telling me about?
Right. This is very close to your locations, and I am sure you can find a lot of people need these services and are not aware of it because you are based in California, I believe. And because of your number, you may be living in another place. But still, they can help you to find other locations in other states as well, too. But this is very good for you. And three W's you put always, dot, cry, R-O-P dot org. Okay.
R-O-P.
Cry, like a cry. C, like a Charlie. R, like Romo. Y, like yellow. R, like Romeo. O, like operation. P, like papa, dot org.
Dot org. How you pronounce that? Cry op?
No, cry rap. Yeah, cry rap. Cryrop dot org.
ROP. Okay, good. I got it. Well, thank you so
much. Yeah, because this is the main for your people in those areas. Because I know you have connections and. I found it because I'm good at what you say too. I can find a lot of other good things. Together, we can help American citizens. And I know a lot of people have a special needs kid or disability and a lot of things. And so this place is one of the good places to go. But also your unemployment and disability center, they can send you to. Be educated on your what you want to be. Not there say, oh, we have this open. Do you want any of them? No, you have to talk to them, say, this is the what I want to learn, technology or whatever it is. This is I want, and I'm good at it, and I want to learn. And then they have to send you, and they pay for full. $10,000 up to $10,000 they pay you. So these are the money is there. If you don't use it, the money will be go back to, you know, they will take it off, and then they spend it for, you know, other matters. So we don't want you to do that. That's a federal program, and the American citizen, we have right to use that, and we have to be using it before this money vanishes.
Yes, and thank you so much for bringing that out, Mike, because I'm sure a lot of people, let me repeat that online so they can actually take this down.
Sure,
ladies and
please.
Gentlemen, I provided you with a website, www.cryrop.org, and that's a site you can go to if you need assistance in developing your skills and getting training. And it sounds like to me that it's fully financed, and you don't have to have any money out of your pocket, do you? So if this is the case,
exactly.
Then you can really benefit from this particular organization. He says it's in California, so you might want to give them a call and see if you have an office locally in your area. And on that note, Mike, we've got to get out of here. We've already been warned that the time is up.
I hope you bring one of them here. I hope bring one of those specialists here, and you talk to them. And if I was able, I will come also talk to them too.
All right, then. Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank
and
you.
And we're out of here.
Yeah.
And let's work this thing out. We can do it. If you're looking to do Parent Information Center, you definitely can come online. I have a training online. And as I told you, I just came out with a supplemental training. For those of you who've been asking me to do this workshop, we could not put the full thing on, but we gave you as much as we could. So go after it, and let's work it out. Stay tuned for tomorrow. Thank you so much, Mike, and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Pleasure is mine. Thank you.
See you tomorrow at 4:30 Central Time. Thank you. Odabo.